Welcome to A Brit in LA with star of stage and screen, Lauren Samuels. Each week, she'll be navigating different areas of the US entertainment industry after swapping London for La La Land. She'll be meeting inspiring figures who are achieving their own Hollywood dreams.
Hello, it's Lauren, and welcome back to another episode of A Brit in LA. Before we kick off, can I just ask a quick favour? Would you mind ever so giving this show a follow? That way you'll never miss an episode. And while I'm on the subject of favours, a cheeky 5-star rating wouldn't go amiss either. Thank you, friends. It means a lot. Now, today, I'm sitting down for a chat with Emmy Award-winning TV host, comedian and actress Dee Dee Sorvino. And I gotta say, I absolutely loved chatting to Dee Dee, all about her fascinating life and career, including talking about her fabulously titled cookbook, Pino, Pasta and Parties, which Dee Dee co-wrote with her late husband, film star Paul Sorvino, probably best known for his role as Big Paulie in Goodfellas. And I just loved hearing all about Paul and their life and love together. Most recently, Dee Dee has launched Sorvino Vino Wines, which she described upon launching as the perfect Valentine to her late husband, which I just love. We had the most wonderful chat. She was funny, warm, and she gave some great advice on just being yourself, following your dreams, and not caring what other people think. Dee Dee, welcome to A Brit in LA.
Well, I'm very happy to be here, being a Scot-Irish gal, so I know a little bit about the UK, and would love to hear about you as well, but you're the boss, so yeah, whatever you want to do, dear.
Oh, I love you already. You're already calling me the boss. I love it. I want to start by asking, you're clearly a multi-talented entertainer. You've worked in so many different areas of the entertainment industry. But what I want to know is, how did you first get started? What did you want to be?
You know, I actually started in politics. I always had sort of a foot in entertainment and maybe a hand in politics. I worked for President Bush at the White House, and I was chairman of the National Young Republicans, and I was on the Republican National Committee, and I was an elected official, so I did all that. And then politics got to be so unappealing that you'd have to wear a flak jacket. I don't want to do this anymore. Plus, I married the late, great Paul Sorvino, a big movie star. So when that happened, they were starting to give him a little bit of a problem about me, because, you know, I'm a Republican, far to the right. Hollywood's very far to the left. Now, they all know me, and they all know I'm the big Republican, but I'm the fun Republican, so they let me get away with it. And I don't do it anymore. You mean, I still am going to vote the way I vote, but I don't do that anymore. I used to, on Fox News, throw bombs, like, every other day, you know, with those debates, all of that. And then I married Paul, and I gave it up, and then I started acting. It's a lot easier.
It's a lot easier, and you don't have to wear jackets. And
yeah, they tell you what to say, tell you what to wear, tell you how to say it, tell you where to stand. It's ridiculously easy. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy to get the jobs, but the job itself is easy. When you do political debate, you got to be on it right now, and you are on air, and it's live, and if you mess up, everybody knows it, just like live stage theater. So if you do that stuff, like comedy, you can do anything. But the acting world, if you can get that gig, that's a good gig. Easy.
So it doesn't run in your family then, acting?
No, no one in my family does any crazy stuff I do. Not at all.
You're the black sheep, as they would say.
Though. I am, for sure, the blackest.
Was it ever in your radar growing up? Or was it like politics is what you wanted to do?
No, I always liked a little bit of both. Say even in high school, student council, but I was also in a school play. And, you know, I mean, I've always liked a little bit of both, politics as well as the fantasy world. And they're both very powerful in their own way. But I've just now gone full on entertainment because the political world is so crazy now.
Wow, yeah.
To the point of being dangerous. If you're involved, they're going to like throw you off the subway stands and such. Look at the prime minister in England lasted like an hour. And she had to leave. I mean, it's just so tough right now. And like on our side, you've got Donald Trump, impeached and indicted, anything else. And then you got Joe Biden, don't even know where the hell he is. So it's just insanity. I'd rather stick to the fantasy world for a while.
Oh my God, I couldn't agree more with you. Let's all try and stay away from politics and have a bit more fun in our life.
Yeah.
As an actress, you've appeared in TV shows like Bad Bloods, Criminal Minds, as well as films Price for Freedom, Welcome to Acapulco, Bad Impulse, among many others. But you've also worked heavily as a producer. How did that switch come about?
I think a lot of actors are producers and producers are actors because producers, it's very broad swath. Like you can either just give money and you're a producer, or you can give your opinion or you're a producer. You can let your house be used and you're a producer. When you say you're a producer, it is very broad. So I would say I'm really more of an actor than a producer. But you know, when you are an actor, if you're involved in the whole process, you end up producing as well.
Yeah.
So you're going to do it. You're going to end up doing it. I mean, I think very few actors do not get involved in that aspect if they're in it long enough. Maybe the really young ones are there just to take their spot and say the lines and that's it. And then they leave and go home. Mm-hmm. You know, some people just stick with that. But producing is a big part of the entertainment world.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Oh, God. Absolutely. And would you say that producing was something that, again, you had your eye on or just you sort of fell into it?
No. I mean, with me, I just kind of go with wherever the wind takes me, whatever the mood is. I think that if it's not fun, stop doing it. If it's something you don't want to do, get out. And a lot of people say things that, you know, like relationships, for instance. I know a lot of women, they do. I'm like, why do you do that? Get out. Well, I don't know. No, get out. When you're done with something and when you're not happy anymore, just move on. So if something looks interested or you know, if I'm presented with a certain situation, I'll just say yes or no. And if it's yes, I'm going to go 100%. And if no, moving on. Or something becomes unfun or something becomes unpleasant or it's boring. See ya.
That is such great advice. That is such great advice. We do as human beings, don't we? I think we get stuck we just get stuck, don't we? Just going, oh, this is how we have to beep, beep, beep around and just stick on the same track. And then, yeah, if it doesn't make you happy, stop.
Get out.
I love it. I love it.
Well, now, Instagram, here's the problem. And I feel sorry for really young people that are like 14 and they've got Instagram because it's all fake. Everybody does the filters. Everybody's, oh, my life's so wonderful. When you know it ain't, okay? I mean, you know, not all the time. I mean, if people put on Instagram and it's something real, I applaud that. Other than, oh, I'm this wonderful, I'm a big movie star. And I'm like, all right, well, I am doing that stuff, but I've got really bad days too. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's good to be real. And it's tough in the world of social media when everybody fakes it all the time because they feel like they have to fake it. So it messes with their mind, especially the women. I have girlfriends. I said, don't worry about it. You are who you are. Enjoy it. And life is short. You know, I know that my husband died less than a year ago. I said, so, you know, anything fake or filtered, it's not worth it.
No, it's not. It's not. I mean, we must talk about your late wonderful husband, Paul Sorvino, of course, well known as a huge actor in its own right. What was it like being married to someone who was also in the entertainment industry? And how did you support each other's careers?
Well, we met on Fox News and I was doing what I talked about before, being a political commentator. And then we got married and I stopped it because it was, it was just fun to go with him on projects. And I'd always end up getting an acting part or I'd go and do other things. We just did everything together. We were happy every single day. We really had a perfect marriage. He was a wonderful man. I mean, there aren't many men like him. He was true to women, lovely to everybody, loved life. Loved acting, and he was like the best actor in the world. Did 200 movies.
Yeah, wow.
And it was really a perfect life. It was a perfect marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, I was so sad about it. I still am, but I was so sad about it for the longest time. All day long, I'm just so sad. But now I'm still sad, but I'm also grateful for the time with him. It's been long enough. It's been 10 months plus, coming up on 2 years, where I can be very grateful for that because a lot of people never have a true love. So if you have it, you can cherish that and at least have those memories.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. What was your favorite project that you worked on together, would you say?
I think our cookbook.
Yes.
Our cookbook, Pino Pasta and Parties, because, you know, doing a cookbook is not an easy feat. It's fun. But, you know, every single recipe that's a day. I mean, that takes all day. So Paul worked on the food, being the Italian, you know, and in Goodfellas, he sliced the garlic and made the dinner, and he knew it was all about, he'd say, now we can eat, it was all about the food. So people equate him with food and drinks, so it made sense. And then I mixed the drinks. I, you know, we have a full menu for every chapter. So I would have a drink for every chapter and we would do the menu and he was the food guy. So we had a blast doing that. And it's a beautiful book. So for me, it's a wonderful keepsake because Paul's gone now. So I have, you know, the every chapter is a story about our life or lives with other people. And every chapter is a dinner party, which will probably turn into a show. We're working on all of that. So that
that's a great idea.
You're invited.
Great.
I think you should come since you're British, because I always tease my British friends on 4th of July.
Do you?
I'm a comedian. It's not my fault. But I always tease my British friends on 4th of July, like, yeah, we kicked your king out. King George was a puss. You know, I mean, whatever. You know, stuff like that. So you should be part of the patriotic dinner. It would be fun.
I would love it. Well, I have to say, I don't think that British cuisine is anywhere near as good as Italian.
Oh, that's
cuisine.
True. And I like the whiskey.
Yeah. Okay. And also, I have to
that's
say,
more Irish though. I mean, that's more of an Irish thing. When I think of English, I just think of gin. I mean, you have all the alcohol everyone else does, but gin is what I always think of.
Gin, yeah, absolutely. Gin, and then I suppose Pimm's. If you're
Pimm's, that's right.
British.
Yes,
Pimm's, of course. I love the title of the cookbook, by the way. Pinot, pasta, and parties. Just aren't they the most wonderful things?
Just a big party. Just a big party. Well, hey, life's a party. You've got to make it that. And we did. We had fun every day. And you really have to do that. You know, just if you just got to find something that makes you happy and move to that and migrate to it and do it. Just do it.
How did you possibly choose which recipes to include in the book? There must have been so many.
Well, Paul chose a lot of recipes and dishes that his mother made. And, you know, he was very close to his mother. So that was sweet. That was nice. In fact, with Mother's Day coming up, in our book, we dedicated our books to our country and also to our mothers. So, you know, I'm very close to my mom. That's why I'm heading back to Indiana. You know, on Mother's Day, I'm going to make it in time to treat her to dinner and a wonderful day. And, you know, and Paul was, he was very much like his mother. I was not able to meet her, but she played the piano and Paul was very musically inclined, a wonderful singer and sculptor. And he was Tony nominated on Broadway. So he really was a Renaissance man. A lot of people throw that around, but he really, really was.
What would you say is your favorite recipe in the book?
Well, I'll tell you Paul's. His is pasta fazool. And
what's
it's
that?
Pasta. Oh my gosh, girlfriend.
You've got to tell me. I don't know.
Well, you're British. Okay. It's meaning,
forgive me.
No, it's okay. British meaning, like you kind of alluded to it earlier, that the Brits are not known for their food choices.
Nah.
You got like five.
Yeah.
You do include beans in a British breakfast or Irish breakfast. What is the breakfast? Is an Irish breakfast?
I call it a full English.
Full English.
A full English breakfast, yeah.
Okay, well, those are good. And they have beans. But anyway, basically, it's a pasta dish with beans. Pasta fazool. That was Paul's favorite. For me, I prefer the drinks in the book.
The cocktails.
Yes, the cocktails. And the most popular one is Goodfella. We went on all kinds of news stations and TV shows, and we would serve it. And it looked kind of safe. And it was lethal. It was like by the end of the interview, you know, interviews are not like podcasts, they're pretty short, but they started drinking them a few minutes before. And the secret was the limoncello. It was hard liquor, but limoncello too. So it doesn't taste that strong, but it is. And they're like, you got a stroke on air.
That's why it's dangerous. It tastes like pop.
Yes. Yeah, it does. So yeah. So that was a ball. And, you know, so, and we always wanted to do the wine after the cookbook. That was some when you get into the wine business. I always wanted to have a kind of a food and drink empire along with, you know, because the acting's fun and the comedy's fun. But I think it's good to have some business going on as well in your life. So that's just me. But the wine right now is just really taken off. We're really happy with it. That was something Paul wanted to do and right before he died. And he was happy right before he died. He had something that took him out pretty fast, which I think is a good thing, really. So he didn't have to suffer. And he didn't. He was happy at the end. And he was happy that he was able to design the wine label. Mm-hmm. And the wine business was about to take off. So then I waited because, you know, he died last July and launched it Valentine's Day in tribute to him. So it's going well. Cervino Vino at CervinoVino.com.
Yes, I saw that you said that this wine label was a Valentine to Paul, and I just loved that quote when I read it.
Oh,
so lovely.
You.
Yeah, and so yeah, I want to talk about your wine. I'm a huge wine lover myself, I've got to say.
Oh, good.
And you've recently launched this wine brand, so Vino Vino Wine, as you said.
We'll have to come to a wine party.
I am desperate to get that invite from you. So thank you.
Done. You're
I'm
invited.
literally like, do you need an assistant? I can help.
You're the
I'll
queen of
take
the wine
tasks.
party. What are you talking about?
Yeah, so Sauvignon Vino Wine, which is a collaboration with the award-winning Lorimar Winery and Vineyard in Temecula. So was it Paul's idea? What was the inspiration? How did it come about?
Well, when your name is Sorvino and Vino's in the name, it's just sort of always there. It's sort of meant to be. And I remember thinking, my gosh, we've got to have a wine called Sorvino Vino. And we do. We got to trademark and everything because I thought, well, we better grab that. And it was kind of from the beginning, we kind of wanted to do the wine before the cookbook. And I said, well, you know, I think we do a cookbook, it'll work out better. Let's just start with that. And then, so it was always in the plans. I mean, maybe, you know, after we got married, I mean, right when we got married, we probably were not talking about it, but a little while after, because we would go out. It was happy hour every day for us, really. And it was usually red wine. You know, we would drink other things too, but we would always celebrate every day, and happy hour was the time. So we would do that and then have a dinner. So food and drink was a big part of our life. And when Paul got sick later and he was in a wheelchair and he, you know, he was more limited, the food and drink aspect became even more important because he was limited to what he could do. But he was still fighting and he was still working. I mean, he was invited to be on The Masked Singer right before he died. And I just said, well, you know, I didn't really, because Paul didn't want people to feel bad for him. So people didn't really know he was sick. And it was really on and off. So he would have, it'd be good times and then bad times. And nobody needed, he didn't want people feeling bad for him. So he was always strong, big Paulie to everybody. But The Masked Singer invited him. And I said, well, it won't work this season, this year, but let's try for next year. So that was a goal. That was something that he was looking forward to working on, and unfortunately not able to do it. But you know, he had very spirited and lovely man and sweet to the very end.
Well, I love that you've been able to create this wine label now for Paul after he's gone. It's
Oh no,
so
he created
fulfilling.
it, just so you
Oh,
know.
he
Yeah,
created this wine.
we worked on it together. He approved it, he loved it. And then we you know, the wine wasn't launched until after he died, but the wine label was done and the plans were ready.
Oh,
So it was, he
fabulous.
was already happy about it. So I'm thrilled with that part because it really is a tribute to him, and it's all part of his project, part of his legacy, and I'm honored to be able to do that.
How involved are you with the winemaking process?
Well, I'm not stomping the grapes, but I was very particular about approving. I've had a lot of wine tasting because we're, you know, we've got the red wine, but we're going to do a white, we're going to do a rosé, you know, we're going to do a sparkling, we're going to do all of that. And I want to get into the whiskey as well. So this is just the beginning. But yes, I was very particular about the wine tasting. In fact, at first I wasn't happy with it and we just kept trying it. And, you know, then we found one that we liked.
Sounds like a fabulous job to me.
It's a
Tasting wine.
fabulous job.
As I said before, if you do need an assistant, Deedee, I am more than happy to
You
offer
are in.
my taste
You are
buds.
in. Let's go to Temecula. You go over there and say, Dee Dee sent me in the lab.
I've never been to wine country, so.
Have to come. No, I'm sure we're gonna do something there. We talked about a movie night or you know, an event. And you know, and then we're gonna do, I don't know when it'll be, you know, Paul died July 25th, so we'll do something on that day. And maybe at Temecula, and you're of course invited if you'd like to come. If you're in the LA
Fabulous.
area, it's not far.
Fabulous. What, tell me, what would you say sets Sauvignon Vino apart from other wine labels?
I think just because it's inspired by Paul, and because Paul was such a true blue movie star, he was such an icon and legend. A lot of these celebrity wines, they sort of do it, you know. And I mean, they do. You know, Cameron Diaz does a nice job, and I don't mind plugging him and other people's wines if I like it and what they do. But she's really active with it, so I do admire, you know, her ad campaign. And you know, these other folks that have bought, you know, my goal is to be like Ryan Reynolds Aviation. I think that's aviation, you know, and they end up with gazillions of dollars. They sell it off. Although
That's
it'd be tough to sell off Sauvignon Vino. I don't know if I could do that, but I would have to do, I would have to do some talking to Paul's spirit on that one. So we'd see. But it'd be a good problem to have, right? It'd be a good problem to have
Oh
to.
yeah. There are worse problems for
There
sure.
are worse problems, but getting into the liquor business, getting into, you know, because spirits, it makes people happy. I mean, you know, some people have trouble with it. Well, okay, they can stay away from it. But the rest of us, it makes life nicer and happy. You know, it's something Paul and I always enjoy. So I always like to give a toast to Paul. And I think because it's inspired by him, it's absolutely going to be a hit. It's already doing well. And it's just been Valentine's Day. We're going to be part of a wine club. We're not allowed to even talk about it yet, but it's a very, very big deal. So we've got some big things coming down the line. We're getting distributors. So it's a fun business. And it's much more involved than acting. You know, I feel bad because look, acting is not easy to get. I just think it's easy to do.
Right. Well, let's talk about your work as a comedian as well, because I have to say, I think that it sounds like the most terrifying job for some reason. How did you get into comedy yourself?
Well, I was always sort of the court jester. You know, I've never been shy, or I've never been worried about what people think of me. And that's the real trick. So a lot of women have trouble with comedy because I think they're so worried about, oh, how I look or how I act or people don't like me. I don't think men care as much about it, you know, but women, I don't know, my girlfriends are just always so worried about how they look, or they're so worried about what people think of them. And if you're a comedian, if you want to be a comedian, get out. Don't even do that, because people are going to call you names. People are not going to like what you do. People are going to be vicious. And if you can't do that, comedy is not for you, because it's just the nature of comedy is when you make fun of people, make fun of things, but they're jokes. People forget their jokes. They're in this box, you know, right over here. But it's, I think you're right. If you can do comedy, you can do anything, because it's really, you just have to have a tough skin, or be like, with me, I don't care. And especially after Paul died, I don't care even more, or I care even less, in other words, because nothing matters. I mean, it just doesn't matter. But if you are a young, pretty girl and you don't want people saying that you're ugly or you're stupid or that, and they will on comedy, it's vicious. But it's something that's been around forever and ever. And it's just takes that type of person who can handle. I think it's great. I think it's fun and funny. I don't care if somebody, I don't like what you said. Like, I care, buddy. I'll never see you again. I mean, that's how I look at it. I mean, if I'm getting a reaction, I mean, look, that's one thing that my manager is, he's like, well, you know, they may love you or they hate you, but they're not leaving your set. They're going to listen.
Right, right.
What is she going to say next? So that's, if you're okay with that. But to me, you just have to compartmentalize. It's just another job. It's just another thing to do. And people are going to like it or they're not. But that's, you are correct. I mean, if you're someone who's terrified of things, comedy, of all of the categories, that would be it.
Yeah. How do you come up with your material? What's that process like?
Topical. I do topical. You know, a lot of comedians, they use the same stuff over and over again. I never do the same show. I may do like bits and pieces, but like the last one I did, Jerry Springer had just died. Do you know who Jerry Springer is? He was Jerry.
Yeah, I remember.
So I did a whole big bit about him going to heaven or hell and what it'd be like to interview, you know, all those people, those terrible people in the interview. And I even got it to like politics, to the Kennedy running and Marilyn Monroe. I mean, you know, I like really go off the rails. And sometimes there are people who will not know their history, because I have a history degree. They won't know their history. I don't want to say my company is smarter than most, but it is fact oriented, and it is historical a lot of times, and it's topical. So if you're not reading the internet or the papers, you're probably not going to get my humor. So yeah, so I'm a little bit more that way. Joan Rivers, well before your time, but I really liked her. She was a super smart comedian, and she always talked about what was going on in the world. Mm-hmm. Late night talk show hosts have to do that. But you know, they've got a table of probably 30 people writing that, which brings us to the writer's strike. That's why these shows come to a screeching halt, because they need writers. You know, I write my own stuff. And you know, but it's just me. I mean, when you're on a network show, I mean, the writing has to be really good, but they have to write it new every single day. Mm-hmm. That's why they need writers. But the long answer to your question is, I kind of go that route. I do kind of a mini late night talk show, and I go topical. I see, well, what's going on? What am I going to make fun of? What am I going to laugh about? What am I going to bring up? Instead of the same old, same old. I don't like stale setup jokes.
No. Or, what would you say are some of the challenges, if any, that you face as a female comedian in a very male-dominated industry?
For me, nothing. You know, I bring that, for me, I am fine. You know, it's just like the last show I did, only women. It happens all the time. Because there just aren't as many, and there aren't, you know, the improv is the toughest room in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So you have to be good, or you have to be able to handle it, because those people don't mess. That audience does not care. If they don't like you, they don't like you. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, but they're usually a pretty smart audience. They're going to get topical stuff. Mm-hmm. You just never know when a room's going to be. You do not know. They may hate you, love you, don't care. It's you're not going to make everybody happy, so you might as well do your thing, get up there, do your best, and
Have
if they
fun.
love you, great, and if they don't, screw off, who cares?
Yeah.
So you have to have that attitude. But no, in fact, I love being, you know, with a bunch of guys. That doesn't bother me one bit.
Good.
I'm good with
I
that.
love that. You're clearly, it's so inspiring to listen to your talk. You're so successful as a businesswoman in so many different areas, hosting, acting, comedy, cooking, and now wine. What would you say are some of the challenges that you face while pursuing these different avenues?
Well, right now, because I'm still in mourning, so I still, you know, so it's a challenge, especially for comedy, to be in mourning for my husband and I do comedy.
Yeah.
So that's been really, really tough. But I'm getting to where it's at least it's doable. So yeah, that's been a challenge. But in a way, I have the spirit with Paul helping me, because that's what he wanted me to do. He says, "You're so funny. You got to do comedy and comedic acting. This is what you need to do. You're not doing it because of me, because of Paul's there. It's all about Paul, as it should be." But unfortunately, I'm Paul, and I'd much rather have that situation. But I don't. So now I'm alone, and now I'm doing my own thing. So as far as the challenges, I love it all. I do. I just miss my husband. But, you know, I don't really, things don't bother me. They just don't. I mean, you know, people get really upset about just anything and everything. It's a business where it's, I think people are more sensitive. I mean, if you're running a donut shop, people don't get their feelings hurt because they don't get an audition that they want, or people don't like the joke, or people think they're too fat, or, you know, or whatever it is. But in Hollywood, that happens all the time.
Yeah.
And if you're not ready for it, you probably need to go do something else. But if you love it and you can buck up and enjoy it, do it. So for me, there aren't any challenges. I try to help everybody else that are struggling, especially just friends are just like, "I'm not making it. I'm not making it." I said, "Says who?" I mean, who are you comparing yourself to? The chick on Instagram that's lying about their followers? And
well, that's the trouble, isn't it?
Yeah, not for me. I get that. But I mean, but for these sweet girls that I know, and they just are bothered by us, and just don't be bothered by it. We're in a different time. I mean, you're too young to know this, before all the filter stuff went, back in the day when you didn't have any of that, it was all about you and the real deal. And now nobody knows what's real anymore.
Yeah.
So, so I think, so you know, and I think my advice to people that want to be in the business, if you love it, go for it, but just keep true to yourself and don't worry about all that.
I love it.
It's not true anyway. You meet them, you're like, "Holy shit, you're like 20 pounds heavier and you're old."
It's so inspiring. See, to listen to you talk.
Did you, oh my gosh, don't you think that's bad when they meet you and then they think you're uglier, fatso? That's not good. Why don't you just put it out there?
I love it. I love it. You're a very infectious person, Dee Dee. I feel you're so true that people are often scared, right, to step out of their own comfort zone. And here you are as the poster child for following your dreams and just having fun. I love it. I love it. When we're all about following dreams on this podcast, Dee Dee. So tell me, what does the future hold for you? Any exciting upcoming
projects?
Well, before
projects? That, I'm going to turn it on you, because I'm a podcast host and I have drinks with Dee Dee. So I ask anything I want, and I know it's your show, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Because you're lovely. I love your voice. And it says a Brit in LA. So what is this Brit wanting to do in LA? That's what I want to know. So I get I'm the guest, so I get to ask if I want.
This has never happened to me on my podcast. The first time that a guest has asked
Well,
me.
When you have a podcast host on your podcast, that could happen in a future.
Well, a Brit in LA, that is me. I am that Brit in LA. I am trying to break into the film and TV industry over here.
Well, that's the reason I'm giving you these little speeches, because I assumed as much. So
yeah.
Don't let it all bother you. You're a beautiful girl, and just go for it and just do it. Have fun.
It's fun. It's a lot. Obviously, I was an actress in the UK, and I kind of thought moving over here that it would be a similar industry, and it is just not. I mean, it is such a different.
Well, that's a show in itself. I mean, I know you don't have time to get into all that, but what do you think is the biggest difference between acting there and here in the industry?
Well, obviously the industry here is ginormous compared to the industry in the UK. So it's a lot bigger. And I feel like people here tend to kind of blow smoke up your ass a bit more. There's a lot of...
Yeah, no shit. That's what I was saying. Yeah, like, oh, they're all liars.
Well, liar, I didn't put it like
liar,
that.
Liar. So that's why you have to just know yourself. Don't listen to anybody. Filter flows, that's all they do. They fucking lie. I'm sorry. I dropped the F. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. It's all right. We're being true here, Dee Dee, okay?
They're funny. I think bleeps are funny, so I hope you do too. But yeah, I mean, you just have to clearly you're beautiful, clearly you're smart, you're doing your thing, so don't listen to any of the naysayers, it's, you know, because people will try to bring you down, and because they're losers. No, yeah. I look forward to your career, but it's much bigger, yes, and people do blow smoke up your ass.
Oh, thank you.
I love a British accent, I do.
I know, when I first moved here, I didn't, you know, I believed everybody. I was naive.
Oh, gosh.
I know. I was
give me
so
a call,
naive.
I'll tell you the truth. I'm one of the few that will. And I am telling you the truth. You're beautiful, and you're smart, and you're young, and you've got all kinds of things. But, you know, but I assume because you're in a Brit in LA, and that's what, and you've got the Hollywood lights and all that. So just stay true to yourself, and you know what to do. You know what to do. And then people that you do find that are good, they're gems, hang on to them because they're not that pretty. And just hang on to them. You know, I mean, you know, there are good people here. Well, I'm not here right now. I'm in Arizona, but in LA, there are, but not as many as you would hope because they're all in competition with you, which I didn't see it that way. I'm in competition with anybody. I'm doing my own thing. I'm in competition with myself, and not even that. I'm just going to do what I want to do. That's what you should do. And don't listen to them. Unless you find somebody who will tell you the truth.
Excellent. Excellent advice. I was going to ask you what advice.
You want to do it all, Lauren?
I want to do it all, Dee Dee. Yeah.
You should. I was hoping you would say that. I didn't get some lame excuse. I just want to do Coke commercials.
No. I want to do it all.
Childhood sitcom, which would be a great gig, though.
Well, thank you. That is absolutely brilliant advice. And before I leave you, any upcoming releases or special projects for Cervino Vino that we need to know about?
Well, Cervino Vino, as I said, there's just one project everyone wants to do because it's such a big deal. But Cervino Vino, we're looking for distribute. Well, actually, we have distributors. The answer to that is you'll be seeing it in the stores. You need to look it up now, though, CervinoVino.com. Buy it, taste it, toast to Paul Sorvino. I would appreciate that. Looking at sorvinovino.com or go to Temecula and say, Lauren and Dee Dee said, we should try Sorvino Vino. And then, but yeah, we'll probably do a movie night there and some other things that I have. Comedy shows coming up and different little acting things. I even tried out, this is something you might consider. Manager gave me a little bit of a hard time about it, but I love game shows. I love trivia. Because I'm usually the one who gets it off. Not all right, but right. So I went out for a game show and I think I'm going to be on it. And I think it's fun.
Awesome.
I would like to be a game show host. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh my God, so fun. I completely agree.
That's the best job.
Yeah, I love that. Wow, it's all this talk of wine and Italian food. It's made me hungry and thirsty. It's only, what time is it? It's 9:30 in the morning.
You're only 80 pounds. You weigh as much as my left leg, clearly. So eat a sandwich. Eat some pasta, something.
Oh, I'm about to go get a glass of wine at 9:30 in the morning.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, of course.
Dee Dee, it has been an absolute hoot talking to you. Thank you so much for being my guest on A Brit in LA. After recording this episode, I chatted to my best mate back home, singer and actor Noel Sullivan of Hearsay fame, and here's a recording of our latest chat. Don't you think a genius title for a book? Pino Pasta Parties, all the things that you love.
Yeah. I need to listen back to this pod immediately because they're all the things that I love.
I know.
Sounds like an inspired cookbook to me. Oh, who wants delicious Liella and a vegan nonsense? What I want is Pino Pasta and a party.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I said. I was like, it's literally all the things that people love. And that I'm obviously, you know me, Noel, I'm not a great cook, let's be fair. You are.
No, you but are you're very master. Good at eating. You're very good at eating and appreciating food. That's what I like. You know, when you come to eat at my house, you're always like, oh my God, this tastes amazing. And that's what you want when you're cooking for people. You want them to enjoy the food. You want them to have a party with your pasta and your whatever Pino. Your Pino is.
Exactly. Every time, folks, that I am invited over to Noel's or I'm just popping over to Noel's or I need to collect something from Noel's, I'm like, what are you cooking? Like, I need him to cook something because it is an absolute delight. Last time I was with you, you did a full roast dinner for us, didn't you?
Well, because you were starved of it. You've been in England for 2 weeks and not one single person who you know had cooked you a roast. I know.
But I do think as well that Italian, obviously we spoke about the fact that English cuisine isn't the best. Let's be fair.
Well, I just don't think it's as distinct as the other European countries. Everyone has their own amazing dishes. And of course, such a massive There's such a huge expat community of Italian people. Half of America is based on Italy.
Yeah.
So then, you know, that beautiful cuisine came with them. So I think it's so spread throughout the world, pizza, pasta, all the beautiful carbs. They're amazing at it. They're the best at it.
Love pasta. And she was saying, Didi, of course, her late husband, Paul Sorvino, who did most of the recipes. She said she was more involved with the cocktails in the book.
Sure.
She was like, I'm the drinks, Paul was the food.
Good girl.
And his favourite was a dish called pasta fazool. Do you know what that is?
Not, maybe it's your pronunciation. I might know it if I saw it written down.
Perchance, it could be. But she said it was like a pasta and bean dish. Anyway, as soon as I was like, I don't know what that is, she was
That's a Tuscan, classic, actually. I know the one. And it's white bean based and it's really delicious.
She said, I think she felt I was quite sheltered not knowing that.
Yeah, you were like, Babs, I'm from Nuneaton. I could have a fish and chips and that's it.
No, I was trying to get an invite to our house, obviously, to have these delicious foods. And wines, of course, because they've now got Sorvino Vino. I think if you've got Vino in your name...
Yeah, no need to put vino afterwards. Just call it Sorvino.
You've got to bring out a vino, is what I was going to say.
I would have just called this Sorvino. Yeah, maybe popped an unnecessary hyphen in there or something.
But I was obviously grappling at getting a tasting assistant job at the winery.
I feel like you grapple with a lot of. It's not a winery; it's a vineyard. But I feel like you get you grapple with a lot of your guests for jobs, but they don't seem to land.
I know. Maybe I'm coming on too strong.
Well, it's been known.
What are you talking about? I'm a really chill person.
Sure. Yeah.
Like
really low
maintenance. Relaxed.
Yeah. Absolutely. Relaxed, just maybe. Yeah. For sure.
But anyway.
Maybe you should go and have some Sorvino Vino.
That's what I need. That's what I need. I interviewed Didi. It was like 9 a.m. and I was like, well, should we? Should we crack open a bottle for this interview or?
Well, in Italy, it's vino o'clock, surely.
Yeah, surely. Oh, I need to go back to Italy. I've not been to Italy in years. I just want to go and drink.
Sorry. Yeah, oh my God, I just have to go back there because I just haven't been there for years.
I've actually only been once in my life as well.
Yes, so calm down. You're more like, you mean Bella Italia you need to go back to.
How dare you? I went with a backpack to Italy by myself and I did like a little Italian tour, starting in Rome, did a bit of Amalfi, did, you know, what's the one where everybody died, the volcano?
Yes,
Pompeii, thank you. That's not a nice way to put it, I do apologise.
But I think Vesuvius was the volcano and Pompeii was the town, but
yeah.
You know.
God, that place.
I hate to split hairs.
Yeah. God, that place is interesting. So what I'm saying is, I want to go back because it was acceptable to just eat pasta and drink a whole bottle of wine by yourself in the square at noon and just sit there for hours and nobody's coming to give you the check and try and move you on.
No. You know? I went to Italy for my 40th birthday and I took my husband with me. Obviously, because it was my birthday.
You have to
you have to do that sometimes. And we went, we hiked the Dolomites in northern Italy. We paraglided over Lake Garda and then went to Massimo Bottura's restaurant in Modena. And I don't know, have you ever seen Chef's Table on Netflix?
I haven't.
All right, here's your homework.
Okay.
Go and watch episode 1 of Chef's Table and I promise you will be in love with the man. He's amazing.
Okay, well, here we go. This is like, I'm getting hungry now, talking about all this Italian food and wine. I'm like, love, this is exactly what happened at the end of my episode with Didi as well. So great, I'm just going to go and probably go to Bella Italia, as we said, actually.
Sure.
Something like that. Love you.
Extra garlic bread. Love you.
Mozzarella sticks. You've been listening to A Brit in LA with me, That Brit in LA, Lauren Samuels. Thank you to today's hysterical guest, Didi Sorvino. Thanks to Noel Sullivan back home. And of course, thank you to you guys for listening. I'm going to ask you to do all the usual podcast things now, people. So give us a follow, give us a like, leave us a review, tell your friends, go on. It really does go a long way in keeping this show alive. You can always get in touch with me via the contact section on our show's website, abritinla.fm. Check out mine and the show's socials. I'm at Lauren Samuels 1988, and the show is at @abritinla_pod. Have a great week until we meet again, and remember, wherever you are in the world, go for your dreams. TTFN.